So you're talking about sort of like a really like a re-envisioning of the way that sort of like activist communities go about like supporting and having actions or whatever it's in the city versus like these communities that you're talking about. Like I feel like we need to talk about how that can happen when it's not at all the same thing for someone to participate in that way.
I'm not necessarily saying that city organizing should try to mirror or mimic how it, because there are a lot of just basic reality differences, as you say, that I don't believe that you can take something that works here and transplant it somewhere else. But what I'm saying is that people who are organizing in a position of support or solidarity have to understand that those differences exist. I mean, I saw so many times within OCAP, right? And Tynanega and OCAP have had a long, sometimes close, sometimes more tumultuous relationship. Where you know actions have been organized together. And I'm just like, I mean, as an example, when 1999, there was a series of actions around housing that took people to Parliament Hill, and there was so it was like buses from Toronto, Comité Sans Emploi organized buses from Montreal, and then Tynanega also organized its people. To go as well, and the police, it was a funny thing because the police on the day were like, oh no, there's no one coming, because they had a sign up in the band office and no one had signed up, right, and oh there's no one coming, you know, we found out later through disclosure, oh no, we've been monitoring the phone calls, there's been no calls, don't worry about it, like, you know, to Ottawa police, don't worry about it, they're not coming, Mohawks aren't coming, and then of course on the day, there's like this totally like packed to the rafters bus, I mean it was their misunderstanding. Like, they didn't understand that it just doesn't go that way. I mean, you organize by word of mouth, by like, I mean, it was hilarious to me because I was so used to the pace of Toronto and, you know, you got an action coming and you're going to go through the phone list, blah, 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 blah. And then trying to do something, trying to nag, and it's like, no, you go and you sit and have coffee for 45 minutes. And then you go somewhere else and you have coffee for 45 minutes. You know what I mean? Like, it was like totally for me, you know, and Sean was always like, I'd be like, well, is this getting taken care of? And he was like, shut up, like, relax, you know? And I think that a lot of that just, you come to a point where you have to trust that the communities know what they're doing and how to do it. And like, Tynanega, like, they'll tell you, you know? People will say, you know, well, you want to assist, you want to help. Like, I mean, you can do this, you can do that. In Tynanega, there's an organization called, the food program is operated by an organization called Midwinter Harvest, which Midwinter Harvest Food Program, which deals a lot with, like, you know, not just food, but, like, that whole sort of area and is, you know, plants the gardens and is building these buildings and stuff. And it, like, people say, like, come and, like, roll up your sleeves and work, you know? If you can't do that, I mean, it, like, we have it organized so that it's technically, it's sponsored by a charity in Toronto, right? It's a grant, you know what I mean? Like, there's those kinds of aspects. But I mean, I think the other thing is that, I mean, the other thing that I can see would be really terrific, you know, if non-native, like, support organizations would take on, solid organizations would take on. And again, it's, like, based on, predicated on trusting the communities and trusting that people in different communities have something to offer each other that nobody else can. You know, I mean, this is one thing, and I think this is really good that, like, this conference and stuff, but ultimately, predominantly, it's going to be geared to education of people outside of the communities, right? I mean, it's in Montreal, it's in a university setting, that has its place, but I mean, what if IPSM or someone else were to, you know, raise the funds, organize to get together, and there's, you know, even within, like, these halls today, you know, like, really strong, clear-minded, passionate speakers from within the different Ojibwe nations, Anishinaabe nations, Cree nations, and to, rather than, you know, bring people all to one spot, send them out, you know, like, fund a tour that actually reaches some of the fly-in communities up north, you know, I mean, there is, I think, in that sense, there's, like, a sense of hope and pride and dignity that can be brought that cannot be attained any other way. Like, it's something that people can bring, you know, and a group of people could bring, it's a funny thing. It's almost like, you know, a stepping back of saying, at a certain point, these things are good, but at a certain point also, it's my own responsibility to educate myself. You know, it's my own responsibility to figure these things out. And that when there is, you know, resources are such a hard thing to come by. When there is resources, you know, like, what is it that, you know, people that we've developed relationships within these communities that we recognize as very much, you know, those people who are able to organize in those communities to assert, like, the power and the strength and the rights of those communities. What is it that they see? You know, what would they think would be, you know, a really terrific thing to help build overall, you know, the overall strength of all Indigenous communities? You know, I mean, and sometimes I think those questions are asked, and sometimes I think that they're not. And I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, but I think sometimes it's just a product of, you know, like, where people are at.
Can you talk about the visitor program a little bit, just like some of the kind of specifics, like of one building being built and like how much food is getting out, and like how's the beef part going? When you got the beef cutter?
No, we're getting there. We actually don't have it set up and functional yet because we're still finishing. Well, we're going to build the one building last year that was going to be different parts, and that was going to be one of the parts was maybe I should just backtrack for people who don't know. See, in Tinanega, still a lot of people do rely on fish and game as like major staples in the household, but there is a dynamic where there is no proper meat processing within the community itself, so people are forced to go off reserve. And the thing about things like venison is that they don't fall under, I don't know if it's federal or provincial, whatever law around like sanitation standards like cow does. It's because it's who the hell eats venison, you know, like who cares? So what you have is these like little places right off the reserve that charge exorbitant prices. That just, you go in and you want to retch because it's so disgusting and so like unsanitary, and there's guts lying on the floor, and you know, like it's just, it's gross. So Midwinter Harvest, one of the first things that it determined to do was to like, you know, set up something within the community. There's within the community like a trained butcher who was like willing to operate it and et cetera, et cetera. So we started last year in terms of gonna like secured land and started to clear it for to build a building, and there was already existing on that land an old barn, and you couldn't see it because it hadn't been used in so long and brush was all overgrown, so it was actually very close to the road but you couldn't see it anymore, so the people started clearing away the brush. A lot of people, Manuel was there come up and help, so lo and behold, like this building that's been there forever, but no one has seen, is suddenly visible. And so everyone's stopping. Oh, I remember when old, the guy who had the farm there, his name was Chappie Hill. I remember when Chappie Hill, and he had 3 cows and 2 pigs and da 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 da. And of course it always ends, you're not gonna tear it down, are you? So instead of tearing it down and salvaging the wood for the other one, people instead decide to restore it to its original, well, it's actually quite glorious now, it's like a beautiful building. But that sort of, I guess, put the brakes on the other one, you know what I mean? So, and then they were gonna use that one for the meat processing, and now Sean says, oh no, it's too nice, we can't cut meat. So I don't know what's gonna happen, but we're like, it's getting there. And then this year too, we did like a lot of, stuff within, like in the schools, we did strawberry planting with the grade 3s and the grade 7s. Did like fish cleaning, showing where the contaminants are and preparing it, talking about all that. And that was an interesting discussion as well, because again, you get to, you know, like address that the whole concept of what I said around like developing economic infrastructure and that, you know, that's okay and that's, you know, that's proper. There's nothing wrong with using the resources that have available. Like non-native fishermen have quotas to take out 60,000 tons of fish out of Lake Ontario every year. You know, why is it not right for Tyndinaga harvesters to, you know, in a way that respects, like, is a, you know, conservationally minded and you know, does all that sort of thing, ensures that the stocks will be there for future generations. Well, it kind of goes without saying, like, of course, and sort of have those discussions with the, you know, the kids who will be up and coming fishers and you know, to take on what is not only a right but, you know, a responsibility as Mohawk people and understand the history of how that came to be. You know, when that fishing campaign started in 92, you know, they didn't know anything about the laws or they didn't have lawyers or anything. All they had was a picture from the Belleville Intel from 1906 of a fishing camp on the banks of the Belleville River, you know, and these are our grandfathers and great-grandfathers, and this should be us, and you know, we're gonna take that back, so. Anyway, that's been in our harvest.